Good evening, post-air show folks. It is our drone show here on EA Radio. We're going to try and dive deep into the details and some of the hurdles that we are facing in the drone and UAS industry. And we are very lucky to be sitting down with Earl Lawrence, director of the FAA UAS Airspace Integration Office. I had to write that down.
Practiced it a few times.
Yes, and he has that unenviable task to try and figure out what to do with this very fast emerging industry that's coming in into the aviation world and how to kind of parse out who has what rights to what space when everybody is pretty sure it's them, right?
That's right.
So is that, if we were to try and give like an overview of your role, is that a maybe an oversimplification, but somewhere in here? Yeah,
maybe. I'll explain a little bit more. My job is actually not just it's integration office. And part of what it is talks about, and when we say integration, is I'm integrating the FAA at the same time we're integrating UAS into the airspace.
So both sides.
It's both sides. How do we get everybody to pull together? So I'm in that inevitable position. I bring all the various FAA offices together so that we're speaking with one FAA out, as we like to say, with one applicant, so out to the community and in dealing with their needs and wants.
Sure. In trying to do that, are you trying to like more clearly define the constituents of these, this is what GA wants, and this is what commercial wants, and this is what the commercial operator, drone operator wants, and this is what the hobbyist wants, and this is the fears of the public that we have to deal with, and the safety needs of the government, and I mean, is that kind of your ball?
It is looking at all those interests, but we're not segregating them out, because that is one thing. What true integration is, bringing everybody together, and and as you found, and I'm sure people have been talking about all week, it's getting pretty blurry in between GA and commercial. When you talk about unmanned, and it's really about automated systems, and we're seeing those grow, and the great electronics, looks how we're using iPads in the cockpits, we're uploading programs, we're using great autopilots. A lot of that is complete crossover with the IT industry and the phone companies, and so it's really how do we all pull that together? But you did mention cities, states, the communities. That's a whole nother community. We used to deal with pilots, and now we deal with everybody in the United States. There's one thing I think you'd like, and the audience would like, is the mayor of San Francisco is on our drone advisory committee, and it was Mayor Lee. He's deceased. He had a sudden heart attack last year. But one of the things he said was, I have an airport. I got an airport manager. I got an infrastructure. I got all of this thing. And then somebody went and made my entire city the airport, because it's now in the palm of your hand.
That is a great analogy, and in fact, yeah, the world is our airport. I love it. So there's been a lot of steps, kind of the two steps forward, one step back, I think, in how to address a lot of the issues within the industry. One of the latest out is the LANCE program, the Low Altitude Authorization and Notification Capability. Can you give me a quick one or two sentence kind of summary what that's about?
Sure. Really what that replaces is, right now in the manned world, you get on the radio, you talk to the controller, you get access into controlled airspace. What LANCE does is let two computers talk to each other, and it's really the same thing. And right. So you're getting still authorization to be in that airspace. It is all about controlled airspace, but we're automating it. That's our version of automating internally, and catching up with the way computers talk better to computers and people talk better to people. And so that's really what we're dealing with.
Yeah, it comes out way faster than your normal call them, get wait for a waiver, anything like that. Yeah.
Yes. Now, that's been slowly rolled out across the nation, so it hasn't hit all areas quite yet. What have you learned with the rollout so far?
Oh, a tremendous amount. One of the things that we're learning as an agency is to really be more like setting standards and working with the internet, because there's not one definition for all of this. So what we're doing with this program, we're working with third parties. It's really about setting protocols for communication. So, you know, on the internet, you got different web pages, people present some different things, but the way the computers talk to each other, it's really all about speaking that same language. Mm-hmm. And so we have our FAA computer with our data about where you can fly, when you can fly there, and it's making that available to all these folks who build these beautiful apps on all of our phones that provide all kinds of extra things in there, but it lets you know where you can operate safely and how high you can operate safely.
So not only is it kind of rolling out geographically, mm-hmm. but also kind of functionally. Right now, from what I understand, the Lance system really only applies to airspace. Do you have some intentions to make that include all operational waivers, daylight waivers, multiple aircraft waivers, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, not on an automated function. So you mentioned waivers. Mm-hmm. Waivers to us is because we don't have the rules in place. And so what we would prefer is to have certified aircraft in place that are just authorized to operate at night, authorized to operate over people. And in fact, that's our operations over people rule was signed out by the secretary last month. It's up at OMB, making its way through the system.
Okay.
So that will include night and operations over.
So is Lance a Band-Aid approach until we get a better until we get those rules in place?
No, Lance is actually in there. It says in controlled airspace you need authorization.
Okay.
So it's not a Band-Aid. It's that replacement instead of talking to a controller. They don't want you all calling the tower and saying, can I fly my UAS or my light aircraft in a particular area? We want to do that electronically.
So to piggyback off of that, you saying that's almost like what about the UTM, the UAS traffic management setup? Is that almost like a preliminary to that final destination there?
It is. We consider that part of our UTM. So UTM unmanned traffic management is really, it's a NASA research project. That's not an FAA program. That's a NASA research project. NASA's research is doing all kinds of wonderful things, some of which will be used by the operators, some of which is just basic research. Some of it will be used by other public entities, and some like military, et cetera, and some of it will be used by the FAA. Lance is our first step think of it as a suite of products. So, or another way to think of it is VFR, IFR are sets of rules of how to operate in the same airspace.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different set of rules, but you're operating in the same airspace. Class B airspace, you can be VFR, you can be IFR, you can be special VFR, you can be VFR as an ultralight with a special provision to go in and out without a radio. We have all kinds of things. Well, now think of UTM like that. It's another set of rules, and that's why we have things like Lance to authorize operations.
While that's being, again, before we get to that point, and that's a great end point, what about extending like current airspace authorizations that are attached to waivers in those Lance areas when that switches over the carry across? Because it's there's going to be some crossover time frame on that, to piggyback on that too, long term plans for the contracted towers that Lance is not including right at this point.
Sure, right. So for the audience here, Lance is covering much of the country where we have FAA towers, because it's the FAA Air Traffic Control Center in those areas mapping out and saying these are the areas we've determined that we can safely operate an unmanned system. There are military airspaces that, and when I say military airspaces, there are areas of the country which have military air traffic controllers providing services to civil operators. And so those haven't been mapped yet. We haven't mapped the contract towers. Those are additional phases. We will continue to do that, but it is linked to controlled airspace. Mm-hmm. So G is not the areas we're looking at, but we are looking at B, C, D, and E, in conjunction with an airport, mapping all of those areas out, and then eventually they'll be included. But it takes time.
Sure. You mentioned the traffic management system. One of the things that kind of depends on that is the remote identification. Is there a concept as to what that's supposed to look like? In the Part 61 world and above, we have ADS-B.
Right.
What is this remote identification, and what is that imagined to be?
So, again, remote identification takes on a new role when we're talking autonomous unmanned operations. And that is really the focus is how do you got to know where your aircraft is,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't know where your aircraft is. Think of ID like that. The operator has to know where their aircraft is. So we're building that ID system, first and foremost, so you know where your aircraft and you know where other people's aircraft are, so you're not running into them. So it's not self-separation. It's literally giving the information to the operator who's responsible. They know where their aircraft is. That's what we need if you're going to go beyond visual line of sight. So that's the first role.
Mm-hmm.
Also, communities and security folks want to know, what does compliance look like? How do I know whether that's a legal operation or not a legal operation? And that's really what they're looking for.
Are we talking remote identification that's attached to the aircraft or attached to the controller?
Actually, we have laid out earlier this year, we have our annual symposium where we educate folks. I'm in the rulemaking process now, so mm-hmm. I can't talk about the actual rule. But what we did in that symposium is laid out. It's about the safety and knowing where to locate the mm-hmm. operator. So there are we proposed areas where, for example, an AMA flying field. That's it. You identify the field, not the person. Mm-hmm. There are some things that you may be operated a little bit further away. You identify the control station, and then some. You know, if you're going across the country, hundreds of miles, then you need to identify off the aircraft. So it's not intended to be one answer. Just like VFR, there's not one answer. You can have a no radio operation. You can have no transponder operations. You know, depends on what you're doing.
So we've got several more topics that we want to cover before we let you out of the studios, and I thank you very much for stopping by. We're talking again with Earl Lawrence, Director of the FAA UAS Airspace Integration Office, and we're going to have more with Earl coming up right after this on EAA Radio.